With the Parsha Va'era, we are deep into the situation of Golas Mitzrayim, and this is really the turning point. Parsha Shemos was a lot of trouble. The end of Parsha Shemos ends in a very low place. Moshe comes to Paro. Paro refuses, makes things worse even. Moshe complains. And that moment of complaint, as we often note, you read the words and you translate the words, but Moshe pays for complaining. But, so to speak, can't help it. It feels the pain of the Jewish people. From the time I came to Paro, things only got worse. The deliverance hasn't even begun. And that's how Parsha Shemos ends. For a person who's never read the Torah before, Shabbos of Parsha Shemos is a difficult Shabbos for him. He doesn't know what's going to happen. He shares Moshe's concerns and what will be. But with the beginning of Va'era, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, Va'yidaber lekim Moshe, Va'yomer elav ani Hashem. And then we have a pasuk which needs to be examined closely. Hashem says to Moshe, Va'ere va'era el Avram el Yitzhak v'el Yaakov bekel Shakai. I appeared to Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov with the name of Kel Shakai. Ushmi Hashem lo nodati lahem. But I was not known to them with the name of Shmi Hashem. As we can appreciate, this pasuk needs to be understood. What is it saying? What is to appear to someone Bekel Shakai? What is to be known to someone with Shmi Hashem? How is this helping Moshe? What is this information? And especially, the question is, just to sharpen it a little bit, these words are not said in a vacuum. This is not a communication ab initio from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is Hashem's response to Moshe's complaint at the end of Shemos. Moshe says, as we expressed before, things only got worse, the gula hasn't started, what is happening? And the answer to this is, Pasuk Gimel, I appeared to the Avos, Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, Bekel Shakai. I was not known to them, B'Shmi Hashem. So not only do we need to know what the Pasuk means, we also need to know how it furnishes a response to Moshe's complaint. If that's I understand the question. I don't understand the answer. And as we can imagine, there are many approaches to understanding what exactly HaKadosh Baruch Hu is indicating with these words. Rashi has two approaches, in fact. But we will take the explanation of the Ibn Ezra, which is quoted by Ramban. Ramban endorses, at least to a degree, the approach of Ibn Ezra. And as we will see, the Malbim develops the general approach. Firstly, and we shouldn't lose sight of these things, we'd like to pay attention to each word, there's actually a bit of a disruption in the Pasuk, even grammatically. Syntactically, it doesn't flow completely, for a simple reason. Va'era el Avraham el Yitzchak ve'el Yaakov bekel Shakai. I appeared to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov bekel Shakai. So far, so good, at least linguistically. We don't know what it means, but at least we can read it. But then, Ushmi Hashem lo nodati lahem. These words are difficult for a simple reason. Shmi Hashem is a noun. If you talk about your name, so you're talking about something in the third person. You're not talking about yourself. You're talking about your name. If that's the case, then the Pasuk should have said, Ushmi Hashem lo noda lahem. My name was not known. Whatever you say about your name, you're talking about something in the third person. You're talking about that noun. So speak about it as for what it is or for what it isn't. If you, the name was lo noda, you could say that you were not known to them. So you could say, Ani Hashem lo nodati lahem. If you're talking about yourself, you say lo nodati. If you're talking about your name, you say lo noda. But how can you talk about your name and say lo nodati? That is a basic Lashon HaKodesh point. And before we get down to the business of what the Pasuk means, the Ibn Ezra makes Seder here in the Pasuk for us. And he invokes a concept which he does actually on a number of occasions, which is known as Moshech Atzmo Ve'acher Imo. Moshech Atzmo Ve'acher Imo means sometimes you can have a word or a letter even, which is stated at an earlier part in the Pasuk. It is not restated later in the Pasuk, but it is to be understood as being repeated. In other words, it's written at the earlier stage, but understood as introducing the later stage as well. In terms of our Pasuk, what that means, very simply, is that the letter Beis before Bekel Shakai, there's only one Beis in the Pasuk, but it really serves all of the nouns and all of the names to come. As if to say, if the beginning says, I appeared to Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov, Bekel Shakai, with or through Kel Shakai, but, and here it's to be understood as Uvishmi Hashem, but with my name Hashem, so it's still really me. The focus is not shifted to the name. It's still, I appeared to them in that way. I was not known to them in Bishmi Hashem, through my name of Hashem. So that letter Beis is a classic, it's almost like a silent Beis, so to speak. Moshech Atzmo Va'acher Imo, that's a clause that the Ibn Ezra uses, something to look out for. But now, Tachlis, as they say, what's Kel Shakai? What's Shmi Hashem? What happened with the Avos? What happens with Moshe? And Ibn Ezra explains. If you look through Chumash Bereishis, you will see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's support and guidance of the Avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, tends to be through the agency of the forces of nature. That is to say, the way that they operate, the way that they succeed, it tends to use natural means. They are enlisted in the cause of their success, but by and large, we don't find them being accompanied by miracles, certainly not on an ongoing basis. There may have been miracles that occurred, shall we say, on a contingency basis. After all, if you're Avraham Avinu, if you've been thrown into the furnace, so you need a miracle to get out. But that's not a way of operating. That's not how you live your life. That's just how you are able to continue to live your life. And so on and so forth. And that, says Ibn Ezra, is the difference between the way Hashem related to the Avos and the way he is about to relate to the Jewish people. Because what's going to happen now is a systematic and programmatic series of miracles. It's going to start with the year of the plagues. It's going to move to leaving Mitzrayim, Kriyas Yamsuf, the whole time that they're in the Midbar, sustained by miracles, an absolutely, completely different order of things. And the question is, what does this have to do with the names Kel Shakai and Shmi Hashem? Says Malbim, there is a well-known exposition in Chazal, it's a Gemara Chagiga, I think in Daf Yud Beis and elsewhere, with regard to the name Shakai, Shin Dalad Yud. Says the Gemara, Anihu Sha'amarti Le'olami Dai. I said, die to the world. I said to the world, enough. What does it mean to say to the world, enough? And what does it have to do with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's guidance of these tzaddikim? Says Malbim, when Hashem says to the world, enough, that means enough has been put into the world in order to provide for the ongoing needs of whoever it is. It's there. It exists already in the world. Maspik. There's enough in the world to take care of them through those forces which can then be arranged and for their success. And that's really what happened with the Avos. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu used the forces of the world, Amarti Le'olami Dai, there's enough here for the success of the Avos. The contrast to that is Shmi Hashem. We call Hashem's name Yudke Vavke, so to speak, his personal name. The name of Yudke Vavke relates to the concept of existence, of Havaya. We call it the Shem Havaya, the name of existence. What it refers to is HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the provider of all existence. And what it signifies is, in the same way that he created all of existence, he is able then to provide other means of existence or other circumventing forces that are beyond the world that he created, because he is the one that supplies it all. And therefore, Shmi Hashem, the name of Yudke Vavke, the name of existence, allows for further elements of existence, further branches of existence, even beyond that which has already been instilled in the world, otherwise known to us as miracles. And that is the difference between these two names and the mode, shall we say, the modus operandi that they represent. There is a further point, and the Ramban already alludes to this, but again, Malbim discusses it more, Baharchava. Not only are the names different, Ker Shakai versus Shmi Hashem, the verbs are different. Whenever too much is changing for doing one thing and another, how much needs to shift for the contrast? We see the difference. They have Ker Shakai, and here we have Shmi Hashem. But also the verb used is Va'era. I appear to the Avos, Beker Shakai. But when you contrast it with Shmi Hashem, it says Shmi Hashem lo nodati lahem, was not known to them. But if the only point of contrast is the names, so why does the medium through which the names are expressed also change? One could have said, I appeared to the Avos, Beker Shakai. I didn't appear to them, Shmi Hashem. Or, alternatively, I was known to them, Beker Shakai. I wasn't known to them, Mishmi Hashem. But as the landscape, so to speak, of the Pasuk shifts, not only do the names move, but also the verbs move, with the media, from Vayera or Va'era to Nodati. Says Ramban, and again, it's further elucidated through the Malbim, this is the difference between the way in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu made himself known to the Avos versus Moshe. Not only is it a new era, in a sense, of Hashem's operation in the world through open miracles on an ongoing basis for the Jewish people, it's also a new era in terms of, well, new. It's a one-time era because it's only for Moshe. Lo kam b'Yisrael navi od k'Moshe. In what way is Moshe's nevuah distinct from all nevi'im before him and after him? Says Ramban, other nevi'im, they receive their nevuah in a dream, because they're entirely passive. They're either in a dream or in a trance, the chaloma daberbo, etc., which means that what they receive is really a vision. That's how nevuah works, and that's why it's called a chazon, and the navi is called a chozer, or a roer, a seer. He sees a vision. Moshe did not see a vision, not in that way, because Moshe communed with HaKadosh Baruch Hu while he was awake, as the Pasuk says, Kedabe ish al re'eh, as a person speaks to his fellow, ponim al ponim. And therefore, with Moshe, it's not about seeing Hashem, which is entirely passive to receive a vision, but it's about conversing with Hashem and knowing what Hashem wants in that way. And that is why, with reference to the Avos, the verb used is va'era, because it was through a mare that they would receive their nevuah. But with reference to the Jewish people who are under the auspices of Moshe Rabbeinu here, that's where the verb used here is nodati. It's about knowing, not so much about seeing. There is more to say about that distinction. After all, as true as we know, other Nevi'im were asleep or in a sleep-like state. Moshe was awake. But the idea that there was no vision involved, one needs to look very carefully in the Psukim at the end of Baal Osecha, which described the difference between the other Nevi'im and Moshe. With other Nevi'im, it does say, Bachaloma daberbo, I speak to them in a dream, Bamarai la Vesvadav, etc., in a vision. But with Moshe, it also says, Umar evelo vechidos, an apparition, no riddles. Utmunas Hashem yabit, he sees the picture. Which means there is an aspect of a visual aspect even with Moshe, but clearly on a different level to that of the other Nevi'im. That's something that we would leave more for those sections of the Torah. But in the meanwhile, everything is accounted for in the sense that we see the difference in the names and also the difference between Va'era versus Lo Nodati. The only question that remains is, how does this answer Moshe's question? It's all important information, but Moshe came back and complained and says things only got worse. And Hashem says, well, here's it's working differently here. That may well be. But how does the fact that it's working differently answer your question of why things don't seem to be moving in the right direction? And to this, says the Malbim, because if things were moving more in the physical realm, the way it would be with the others, physical cause and effect being maneuvered for a positive outcome for the Jewish people, so then you'd be entitled to expect that the Geula will begin by something moving forward, because forward movement begets further forward movement. It shouldn't move backwards. And therefore Moshe, who is observing the cause and effect, which doesn't seem to answer to any progression towards Geula, to that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, the Geula is not going to come from a natural place. It's not going to come from cause and effect of natural means. Which means that the first step of Geula, if you're thinking that it needs to go forward in order for the Geula to move forward, it's like an entirely different order of where the Geula will be coming from. And things can move backwards, and still that's preparing for the Geula, as indeed the Parsha unfolds in that way. So these are very important comments, I would say. It's certainly fair to say that when it comes to Va'era, it's easy to skip over the first pasuk because whatever it means, and we cut to the plagues, and where things start moving, at least in the way we think we understand. But that's all the more reason to devote some moments to understanding the opening psukim here. They are the introduction, effectively, the conceptual introduction to the entire parsha. A little bit further on, actually, before we get to the plagues, there is an interesting meeting which takes place between Moshe and Paro, and that is in Perek Zion, Pasuk Ches. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe vel Aaron lemor. Ki daber lechem paro lemor. If Paro will say to you, tenu lechem mofeis, provide a sign. Va'amata el Aaron, tell Aaron kaches matcha vashlech lifnei Faro yehi litanin. Tell Aaron to take his staff, throw it into Paro, it will become a tanin. What is a tanin? Well, if you look in Rashi, Rashi says one word. Tanin means nachash. Okay, it's a snake. Likewise, that's Rashi. Okay, interestingly, Unculus, and Rashi is very often in league with Unculus, but here Unculus translates the word tanin as tanina. And for those that have just finished the Daf Yomi cycle will know that very often, from Hebrew to Aramaic, you put an aleph on the end. But what does that mean? What is a tanina? Does that also mean snake? There is an Aramaic word for snake. It's called chivya. When Parshas Bereishis, when we hear about the snake, it's called a chivya. Some say that chava was actually renamed partially in remembrance of what happened with the snake. But tanina, apparently, it's not a snake. And other Mephoshim explain that Tanin is actually a crocodile. And that was a very big and important entity with regards to Mitzrayim. The Navi Yechezkel, I think it's the Haftorah for this week's Parsha, he's the Tanin HaGadol, he's the great crocodile. But Rashi doesn't explain that way. Interestingly, later on, in fact, in just a few psukim, just before the Makkah of Dam, right, the plague of blood, Hashem tells Moshe to take the staff that was turned into a snake. Now the question is, which staff is that? Because here we're saying that it turned into a tanin. But Hashem tells Moshe to take the staff that was turned into a snake. So that might be taking us all the way back to the end of Parshas Shemos, when one of the signs that Moshe was to show to the Jewish people was that his staff turned into a snake. It could be that Rashi wishes to avoid such to-ing and fro-ing, and therefore explains that the whole thing is really the same idea, but others differentiate between them. But be that as it may, what's the point of this mo-face? After all, if the idea is merely, quote-unquote, to provide something supernatural, one can envisage any type of miracle happening. But it seems to be quite specific. the Medrash, and it's a well-known part of the Medrash at the time of Kriyas Yamsuf, discusses the fact that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu opened the sea for the Jewish people, and they're going through, and then Mitzrayim are going through, and it's got to stay open for the Jewish people, but close in on Mitzrayim. So there are very well-known words whereby Midas Hadin then comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, how come you're saving them and drowning them? What's the difference between them? Halala Ode Avodah Zarah, Valala Ode Avodah Zarah. It's a tragic fact that to a significant degree, the Jewish people got involved in Avodah Zarah. That's not only in Chazal, not only quote-unquote in Chazal. It's also in the Psukim. The Navi Yechezkel also says, if there's Psukim in Yechezkel about Yetzias Mitzrayim, and in a certain section, it says that Hashem sent Aaron, actually, even before Moshe, right, Aaron, to tell them to abandon their Avodah Zarah, and they didn't. And here they are. So Midas Hadin says, they're the same. Keep the sea open for both of them, or close it in on both of them. What's the answer to that? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, how can you compare the Egyptians? They can do what they want, and they choose Avodah Zarah. The Jews chose it out of onus, out of duress, however that duress works. They were in dire straits. They were in difficult circumstances. Out of desperation, they turned to Avodah Zarah. It's not the same. It's not the same. In fact, there's a very interesting comment of the Beis Halevi in Parshas Shemos, where just before the vision of the burning bush in the beginning of Perek Gimel, you have this conclusion of Perek Beis, which says, Vayar Elokim es b'nei Yisrael, Vayeda Elokim. Hashem saw the Jewish people, and he knew. And of course, the question is, we're just looking for Pshat. What did he know? It doesn't say what he knew. I mean, he knows everything. But what does he know here? The pasuk doesn't say. He looks at the Jewish people, and he knows. But what does he know? But that's where the Beis Halevi says that it relates to this point. In other words, you have the Jewish people, and now the critical question is, do they deserve to be redeemed or not? Well, their actions are somewhat wanting. But having said that, just before the Geula begins, it says Hashem looks at the Jewish people and he knows. What does he know? He knows that whatever they're doing, they're only doing because of force of circumstance. But it's not them. It doesn't express them themselves, and therefore they are worthy of being redeemed. Rav Meir Shapira, who has been the focus of much discussion over the last few weeks, rightly so, he explains that this is what the Mofes is about. Paro is in a situation where he looks at the Jewish people and says, you're coming, I would say, almost claiming the moral high ground, as if to say, these are a special people. Says Paro, they don't look special. They look actually like Egyptian wannabes. So it looks like you're about to set a whole production in motion, but for what? Can you explain yourselves? Can you express why the Jewish people are any different? And why they deserve such special consideration. And that's why, says Rav Meir Shapira, Pasuk Tes says, Ki yedaba aleichem paro le'mor, before the whole thing begins, paro's going to turn to you and say, well, what's this discrimination here? There's no difference. Tenu lachem mofes. Provide a sign for yourselves. Provide some indication about your worth. Tell me something about you, because you don't seem that different than us. Tenu lachem mofes. What's the answer? The answer is, and it's not a polite answer to Paro, but he's beyond deserving such politeness. Everything that's wrong with the Jewish people is because of Paro. Which means, if you view them as they are when they're under Paro's thumb, so you're effectively viewing everything that's wrong with Paro. But what HaKadosh Baruch was saying about the Jewish people is when you take them out, they become the Jewish people. That's the mofes. And how do you see it? Says the Pasuk, tell Aaron, take a mate, look what happens. Mate, mater Elokim, a staff of God, it's a holy thing. Look what happens when you throw it in front of Paro, turns into a crocodile. Hashlech lefnei Paro, yihi lesanin. That's what happened to the Jewish people. They're also Matei Elokim. They're a holy thing. But they got thrown in front of Paro. And look what they became. You pick them up again, Matei Elokim again. And that's what will happen with the Jewish people. So don't judge their essence by how they are by the time you finish with them. Judge them by how they are by the time I've taken them out from you. And then we'll see the real B'nai Yisrael, Matei Elokim. With their flaws, as the Chumash goes on to describe, which needs to be examined carefully, but that's not a Tanin anymore. That's not what they are. In Moshe's hands, they're Matei Elokim. So from here, we move to the section with the Makos themselves, and I'd like to focus actually on the final Maka of the Parsha, because if we go in order, we'll never get there. And it's one of these times where it's kedai to start from the end. And that is Makas Barot. Makas Barot. As a friend of mine put it, this was the original Hail to the Chief. So this is in Perek. Perek Tes. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Perek Tes, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Hashkem baboker, get up early in the morning, v'syasev lifnei Paro, and present yourself before Paro. What's with the getting up early? What's with the Hashkama? As we know, the Makas are divided into three sets, and the first of each set has Moshe confronting Paro on the Nile. That's what happened with Dam, the Tzach Adash Ba'achav, the Dalet of the Tzach Dam, plague number one, he confronts him on the Nile. Orov also, Adash, confronts him on the Nile, and the Beis of Barad Ba'achav on the Nile. The second is in Paro's house, and then the third, there's no confrontation, just the Makkah happens. They're internal circuits, internal groups within the Makos. And what's about confronting Paro on the Nile? Because the Nile is a deity for the Egyptians, and it's really taking the fight really to their most powerful place. But there is something else. With regards to Paro, Makas Dam, it says, go to Paro in the morning, Hinei Yotzei Hamayma. Chazal inform us, Hinei Yotzei Hamayma, it doesn't just mean that Paro is going out to the water of the Nile. Paro is going out to Paro's water, in the sense that Paro presented himself as something of a deity who did not really have normal the bodily functions that everyone else had. That's how he presented himself to his people. Of course he did, but where did he perform these functions? In the Nile, which tells you just about what Paro thought about the whole thing. And that's why when Moshe confronts Paro at the Nile, it's actually a very uncomfortable time for Paro, because he has things that he'd like to attend to there, and he's getting held up by Moshe. And that's why any other time that Paro felt that Moshe might be meeting him at the Nile, so he thought he'd go a little earlier in order to take care of those things. And that's why the earlier that Paro goes, the earlier Moshe is there waiting for him. So Hashkama is not the answer for Paro, because Moshe is told, Hashkem baboker v'yisyatsev lifnei Paro. Okay, be that as it may, I don't think those are the weightiest of Paro's concerns at this stage, although one can't know. So we have the challenge there. Shalach esimi v'yabduni, pasuk yudalad, ki bapam azos, ani shalach es kol magefosai el libecha. I'm going to send all my plagues to your heart. U'bavadecha v'amecha, etc. That, of course, needs to be understood. This is not all of Hashem's plagues. This is number 7 of 10. In what way is it all? There is a comment of Rashi. Es kol magevosai, all my plagues, lo madnu mikan shemakas bechoros shekula keneged kol hamakos. From here we learn that makas bechoros is equal to all of them. The question, of course, is what's Makas Bechoros got to do with anything? That's Makas Bechoros is number 10. We're at number 7. There are Perushim. to explain these words of Makkas Becherwos. However, it is important to note that according to one of the earliest Mefarshe Rashi, and the idea you see really from within a short while after Rashi's Peirush, I wouldn't say a short while, but certainly in a century or two after Rashi's Peirush, there are already Peirushim on Rashi's Peirush. Now they number in the dozens, if not hundreds. But from what I understand, one of the first, if not the first, of the Peirushim is a sefer called Sefer Zikaron. And Sefer Zikaron was written by Rabbeinu Avram Bukharat. And it's always worthwhile checking in with the earliest of Mefarshei Rashi to see what they say. And on this occasion, the Sefer Zikaron says that Makkas Becherwos is a misread of Rashi. And in fact, it should be something else. What happens is, as can sometimes happen, that as manuscripts are copied, so stock phrases will become condensed into rushatavas, into acronyms. And this is done for a number of reasons. Firstly, for expedience, because if there's a lot to write, and moreover, for economy, for ink. Back in the day, nowadays there's no lack of ink. There is no ink. So people don't. That's not the issue. The issue is actually finding something worthwhile to say. But it's the converse of how it used to be. And you see, even in and my father told me this, Zechon Lebrach, even a sefer like the Minchas Chinuch, written in the 1800s, and it's full of rushatavas. It's full of rushatavas because he literally could not afford the ink. And therefore, anything that could be put into rushatavas was put in there, and this was always the case. But sometimes, as they later got reopened, they were not always reopened faithful or accurately in terms of what they were before. They were condensed, and things got lost in translation, so to speak. Sefer Zikaron says that originally the text of Rashi was. Lamadnu mikan shemakas batzores, famine. Batzores is famine or shortage, right? Shortage of food or water. That's shukule keneged kol hamakas. That's true. And as if to say, a week of discomfort or pain, even if it's acute or extreme, but it can pass. But if it affects your food supply, that's the future. And therefore, says the Sefer Zikaron, the Rashi is saying Makkas Batzores is Shekulu Keneged Kulan. Makkas Batzores got condensed into Membeis, and the people who are in the opening Rosh Hatavis business are not always in the condensing Rosh Hatavis business, and therefore Makkas Batzores became Makkas Becherwos, but be that as it may. Now, that's the warning. The warning is it's going to be barred, and anything that's outside will be destroyed, will be pummeled. And Pasuk Yotes, Batash Lacha Ezes Miknechai, take all the flock in, it's Kol HaShem B'chasada, anything that's outside, take it in. It's amazing that they were warned to do this. Kol HaAdam B'Behema She'imotze B'chasada, V'lo Yosef HaBaisa, any person or animal that's in the field, that's it. They will be finished. The force of the bar, the size, and the speed, as well, with which it will descend, will destroy anything. Okay, so it's a warning. Not only a warning that the Makkah will happen, but also adjuring them to take everything inside. Well, was this warning heeded? The pasuk says by some people. It depends. Hayarius Devar Hashem, me Abdi Para. Those from amongst Para's servants who feared Hashem. So they took their stuff inside. If you fear Hashem, why are you a servant of Para? That's another question. They took their stuff inside. Vasher Somni Bol Devar Hashem, but a person who paid no heed, he didn't take it to heart. Vayazovas Avada Vesmikneu Basoder. And that, of course, is one of the important messages. It's not just about Mitzrayim. Obviously, it reached a head in Mitzrayim. But we're talking about the Egyptians after six plagues that have come, six for six. The country's being decimated. They're told, and they're being told to take their stuff in, to take their things in. And there are those among them who just do not take it to heart. No one's going to tell them what to do, and they just keep going. The hardening of the heart was not only for Paro, it was also those in his environs. It's interesting that the pasuk talks about those that feared Hashem may avde Paro, from Paro's servants. But the question is, well, what about if you weren't Paro's servant? We always divide them between Paro's servants and then his am. Me'avadecha or me'amecha. What about those who feared Hashem from the greater population? How come the pasuk emphasizes that this is about those from Avdei Paro? But Mefarshim say, very simply, no one told him. This message was given to Paro and his entourage, right, his court. They knew about it. They didn't publicize. They didn't publicize because they're not interested in publicizing on behalf of Moshe and his God. So you have an amazing situation whereby you have the broader population, they had no idea what was happening, and no one told them, and they could have been warned. But to warn is to be a mouthpiece for Moshe, and they say, we tell Moshe what to do, he doesn't tell us what to do, we're not going to issue his warnings for him, and they never said. So did anyone do anything? Yeah, the servants knew. So from the circle of people that knew, there were those who had the luxury of at least being able to avail themselves. And even then, not all of them did. There is a fascinating comment of the Targum Yonus and Ben Uziel. The Pasuk speaks in general categories. Those that feared Hashem, those that didn't take his words to heart. Do we have examples of any such people? The Targum Yonus and Ben Uziel identifies one figure who represents each group. The Yarius Devar Hashem from Abdei Paro and Lo Sam Libo. Who's the Yarius Hashem? That's Eov. Eov comes up again here. We know from the Gemara he's one of Paro's advisors. Yisra ran away. Eov is still there. And he's in an unusual situation, but he is a God-fearing person. The Pasuk says in Sefer Eov, Ishtam Yirei Elokim v'sar meira. And he is a God-fearing person from among Paro's servants and represents those. But we have a name to put to that category, Eov. Who's Lo Sam Libo? The other advisor of Paro, Bilam. Of those original three, Yisra, Paro, and Bilam, Yisra ran away, Eov is Yirei Elokim, and Bilam, of course, is a classic, Lo Sam Libo El Devar Hashem. He doesn't take anything to heart that doesn't suit him. His donkey can start having a schmooze with him, and it doesn't deter him from his path. So he's Lo Sam Libo El Devar Hashem. He leaves everything outside. Nothing will move him. Nothing will shake him. Nothing will change his course. There is a very interesting comment from a sefer called Yalkut Ha'urim. I'm not familiar with the author. I've seen it, but the sefer was quoted. Because the Gemara says that in Parshas Balak, when Bilam goes with Sari Moav, so the pasuk, as we know, specifies that he went with them on a donkey. Allah Asom. And interestingly, the Gemara provides further background. This is in Perek Chelek and Sanhedrin, because Sari Moav and Sari Midyan, they're there on their royal steeds. And he's in a bit of a Nebuch situation here. He's on a donkey there. And so someone asked him, do you have a horse? Well, why are you riding a donkey? And he said to them, Biritiva Shaddai, I left it in the field. So that's why I have a donkey. So the question, of course, is, I mean, they've waited this long. They can't wait for him to go and get his horse from the field. It's important for them that he should come mechubad. Where's your horse? Left it in the field. So go get it. But the Yalkut Ha'urim says, based on the Yonus and Ben Uziel, what Bilam is saying is, no, I don't have a horse anymore. I left it in the field. When I'm that one. I'm the one who didn't pay any attention. When Moshe says, everything that's left in the field is going to be destroyed, I didn't pay any attention. I left it in the field. I left my donkey. My donkey was inside. So Barat happens. And Paro calls Moshe. Pasuk Kaf Zayin. Vayishlach Paro vayikol Moshe l'Aaron. He calls Moshe l'Aaron. Vayomalim chatasi apam. This is the first for Paro. He's never said these words in his life. I've sinned. Hashem atzadik. Vaniva ami harishayim. Hashem is right, and we are wrong. Wow. What is it about this plague that made Paro say that? I mean, to say he just said six plagues. He always buckles during the plague and then regains his composure after the plague, but he never says Hashem is the tzaddik and we're the rishayim. But Mefarshim explained, it's really what we've been talking about. It's not that Hashem is right and demonstrates that he's right by destroying my country progressively. Hashem is right, meaning he's the tzaddik. In what sense? Because he warned us and he told us how to protect ourselves. And me and my people, we're the rishayim. We did not pass on that message. It turns out that Hashem expressed more concern for the Egyptian people than Paro did. And that's something that he realizes at this stage. Hashem atzadik, v'ani v'ami harishayim, please daven that it should stop. Hatur el Hashem, enough. Enough kolos el elokim, enough of these frightening noises, enough of the hail, I'll send you out. Moshe says in Pasuk Kavdes, Vayomer lav Moshe, Kitzesies ha'ir, I'll leave the city, Ephrosis kapay el Hashem, I will daven to Hashem, and it will stop. Why does he need to leave the city, as the Mefarshim point out? Even Rashi says, in fact, that the city was full of idols. And specifically, it was full of all the animals that those had brought in, right? They were concentrated right there. And therefore, in this occasion, Moshe doesn't want to daven where there's a avodah zarah, so he needs to leave to find a safe place. And that's what he does. And then what happens? Pasuk Lama Dalet. Final two psukim of the parsha. Vayar paro ki chadal hamatar v'abrad v'akolos. He saw the whole thing stopped. Vayosef lachto. And he continued to sin. Vayachbed libohu v'avadav. That's it. He's hardened again. That's it. The question is, how did this happen? As if to say, many Mefarshim, as much as we see Paro, and we, for us it's just the whole thing, it doesn't need explanation. His heart is hardened, his heart is softened, he says yes, he says no, he agrees, he retracts. But many Mefarshim identify within the plagues something that Paro latched onto in order to reassure himself that he really was right all along. And even though he's clutching at straws, that's what it is. The question is, what is it about what just happened? The plague started, he asked for it to stop, it stopped, and Paro's heart is hardened. What made his heart harden? The Rachaim HaKodesh says, the answer is in Pasuk Lamed Aleph and Pasuk Lamed Beis. And again, you see how the certain person, where a show of compassion will never be recognized as such. It will only ever be a show of weakness. And that unfortunately remains true in many places, certainly in this region. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vapishtava Saronu Kasa. The flax, the barley, they were decimated because they were ripe, and therefore when the hail fell on them, they were pummeled and destroyed. Pasuk Lamed Beis, Vachitava Kusemes Lo Nuku. But you have the wheat, you have the spelt, they weren't destroyed. Kiafilos Heino. They were yet in the earlier stages, they were pliant in that way, which means even the hail didn't destroy them. The net result was that certain crops were affected, certain crops were not. What's that for? To give the Egyptians something to eat? And what does Paro say? You see, didn't destroy everything, so we shall persevere. And therefore it was Dafka, the sparing of certain crops as a show of compassion for the Egyptians, that Paro says, aha, the plague is not as powerful as it said it would be, and that is what fueled his recovery, so to speak, and his retraction, the hardening of his heart. So says the Rachaim HaKadosh, the fact that some species, some crops were not affected. One of the Rishonim, the Riva, one of the Balei HaTosfos, has a somewhat different explanation, same general approach. But he says, if you want to know what made Pharaoh backtrack again and be stubborn again, follow the psukim carefully. Because if we go back to Pasuk Kaf Ches, Pharaoh says, Hatir al Hashem, please beseech Hashem, Varab, it's enough, Mios Kolos Elohim, Elohim, Uvarad, enough of these noises, enough of the hail. That's his request. He wants the noise to stop. He wants the hail to stop. Okay. What does Moshe say? Vayomer Elav Moshe, I will do as you say. Kitzesias are here. When I leave, at first is Kapayel Hashem. Hakolos Yechdalom. The noise will stop. Babar Liyaod, there'll be no more hail. So the request and the discussion is about two things. The frightening noises and the hail. But there was another element here. There was also rain that accompanied the Barad. It's something of a junior partner, so to speak, within the Makkah, but it was there as described in the Psukim. And moreover, have a look at Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Vayetze Moshe mi'im Paro esa'ir, so Moshe leaves. Vayefros kapav el Hashem. He davens to Hashem. And then what happens? Vayachtelu hakolos v'habarad. The noises, the hail, they stop. Umatar lo nitach arza, and the rain stopped as well. Aha. Look at Pasuk Lamed Aleph now. Vayar paro ki chadal hamatar v'abarad v'akolos. And Vayosef lafto, he saw all this had stopped. He continued to sin. V'echbedeva hu v'abadav, and he hardened his heart. How does seeing all this harden his heart? Says the Riva, notice something. Firstly, they've only been talking about the cessation of two things. The noises and the barad, as we said, and the hail itself. Paro never mentioned the rain. Presumably, Paro felt that at this stage, you know, if it keeps on raining, that's the least of his worries. So that's okay. And Moshe says, okay, the hail and the noise will stop. And no one's spoken about the rain. But what happens? Pasuk Lamed Gimel, after Moshe's davens, everything stops. All three of them stop. Not only the kolos and the barad, but also the matar, also the rain. And isn't it interesting that as we go from Pasuk Lamed Gimel, which is what happened, to Pasuk Lamed Dalet, which is what Paro saw, the rain goes from being mentioned third to being mentioned first. Why? Because this now became the focus of the fixation of Paro. As if to say, I only ever asked that the noises should stop, and that the hail should stop. I never said the rain should stop. But look at this. Ki chadal, you know what's up? Hamatar. Look at that. No more rain. No one spoke about that. But that wasn't part of the arrangement. And also the barad and the kolos. That was enough to harden Paro's heart. As if to say once again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided more than Moshe said he would daven for. More than Moshe, than Paro even asked for. Paro couldn't even bring himself to ask that all three of them should stop. Just to stop the two of them. And Hashem stopped all three of them. And Paro, once again, why did the rain stop? No one spoke about the rain. Maybe something else is happening here. Maybe, and once again, he's able to get into that whole rut of, if I can just persevere, there's got to be more to the situation than meets the eye. I didn't ask for the rain to stop. Once again, an extra show of compassion for him was a sign that there was a flaw in the system, and that was enough. That was enough to keep him going. For some people, that's all it takes. And what happens? Final pasuk by a chazak leparo. His heart was hardened. We will need to discuss Mit Hashem on another occasion, the difference in connotation between the end of Pasuk Lamed Hei, Vayachbed Libo, his heart was heavy, versus Vayachazak Libo, his heart was strengthened, and there's also Akshay Esli, power to harden Paro's heart, the different connotations of those three things. But at any rate, Vayachazak Libo, his heart was hardened, Velo Shalach as Bnei Yisrael kasher dibar Hashem biyad Moshe. Okay, now there's something quite unusual, and I have not seen Meforshim discuss this, which means I need to keep looking. But in the meanwhile, it's happened a couple of times. You have this signature that in the end, when the plague abated, Paro's heart was hardened, as Hashem told Moshe. We've had it a couple of times. The thing is, this pasuk is the first, because on the other occasions it says that his heart was hardened, kasher dibar Hashem el Moshe, like Hashem told Moshe. Here, it doesn't say kasher dibar Hashem el Moshe. It says kasher dibar Hashem biyad Moshe. And the question is, what does biyad Moshe mean? Hashem spoke biyad Moshe. When Hashem speaks to Moshe, does he speak through Moshe's hand? What does that mean? So what's the difference in connotation, and why is it mentioned here? The truth is that we do find the expression elsewhere in Torah, Asher dibar Hashem biyad Moshe, al pi Hashem biyad Moshe. What does it mean? It normally means biyad Moshe means through Moshe, because Moshe is telling other people. We say al pi Hashem biyad Moshe, by Hashem's word, through Moshe telling other people about it. When Hashem speaks to Moshe, that's Hashem to Moshe. When Hashem speaks through Moshe's hand, that means it's been communicated to others. But what does that mean for us here? Because it's only between Hashem and Moshe. So I think that the pshat answer to this question is that we have a long conversation here between Moshe and Paro. And Moshe's words to Paro, generally speaking, are prefaced with Ko Amar Hashem, whatever he says to Paro, Hashem tells him to say. That's certainly true in the introduction to the plagues. And I'd like to raise just a general parshanut question in this parsha. All the introduction, all the prelude to the plagues, all the warnings come directly from Hashem through Moshe to Paro. Ko Amar Hashem, he says, so says Hashem. But then sometimes you have follow-up conversations between Moshe and Paro. Paro calls them and says stop, and then they speak for one or two sentences. Are Moshe's words and those post or during the Makkah, are they also from Hashem, or is that from Moshe? It's not clear, but it makes a big difference, especially when we look at Pasuk Lamed of this parsha. What does it say? Again, Paro is asked, stop the hail, stop the noise. Moshe says, I'll do it. And then Pasuk Lamed says an amazing thing. Vatava vadecha, you, your servants, yodati, I know. Ki terem tirun mipnei Hashem alokeichem. Terem tirun. What does the word terem tirun mean? Rashi explains, adayin lo tirun. You will still not fear Hashem. What does that mean, you'll still not fear Hashem? What it means is, Yadati adayin einchem yireim. You're still not God-fearing people. Umishati haravacha tamdu bekilkulchem. When the plague abates, you'll just go back to your ways. You'll just continue in your non-God-fearing ways. Meaning, and you're going to retract. So, what's amazing about this pasuk, as explained by Rashi, is that this is the first time that Moshe is telling Paro that he will retract. As if to say, thus far, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has told Moshe that Paro will retract. Hashem has told Moshe, I'm going to harden his heart, he's not going to let you go, he may say he will, he'll take it back. So that's an ongoing thing that Hashem says to Moshe. No one's ever told Paro that until now. According to Rashi, Terem Tirun, I'm telling you now, says Moshe to Paro, you still will not fear Hashem. You're telling me you'll let them go, I'm telling you you won't. Moshe is effectively telling Paro that his heart is being hardened. It's an unbelievable development within the whole situation. This is the first time Paro is actually being appraised of the fact that his heart is going to be hardened, and he will not let them go, even though he says that he will at this time. And if that's true, and if these words are also, shall we say, sanctioned by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which again is our question, when the conversations during the Makkos, Moshe's words to Paro, that's also coming from Hashem? If it is, then we understand that when the Parsha ends by saying that Paro's heart were hardened, it concludes by saying Kasher Dibra Hashem Biyad Moshe, through Moshe, because he was actually informed on this occasion, through Moshe, that that would happen. That's the first. And in fact, this may explain to us, just as a concluding point, why the Parsha ends here. It's interesting. There's 10 plagues, and they're divided up. 7 in our Parsha, 3 in the next. But of course, 10 is naturally divided into 2 sets of 5. And the plagues are divided into 2 sets of 5 in many ways, or in other ways. But it's interesting that the Parsha ends at the end of Barat, and then the final 3. But they really do represent a new Parsha. Why? Because Paro's already been told. It's a new stage within the plagues, where Paro's already been told that his heart is going to be hardened. From a certain point of view, one may ask, is there still any point in warning him? Is there still any point in remonstrating with him? And that's why the beginning of Parshas Bo, Vayomer Shem al Moshe, Bo al Paro, come to Paro, Ki anich barati esli bo, for I have hardened his heart, ki, and Mepharshim say means even though I've hardened his heart. Why is that of the essence here? Because the point is everything's changed now. Moshe might be thinking, why should I still go to Paro? It's not going to make a difference. And he knows it's not going to make a difference. He's been told on the highest authority that it's not going to make a difference. And Hashem says, even so, even though I've hardened his heart, nonetheless, there's due process, he needs to be warned, and that's how the Makos will go. But that is really a new gear that the Makos have shifted into, and that's one of the reasons why it really opens a new Parsha for those final 3. It's absolutely an overdrive, what one could say. I mean, Paro has been told that he's not going to let them go, and everything is out in the open, and still it happens as it's seen through to its conclusion, which we'll come to consider Mitzvah Hashem next week. We'll leave it over here for this evening.